the new point of view. I think a lot about seeking and finding a better perspective. I imagine it to be kind of like my secret weapon in a war against my own prejudices and biases. Often think that if I can just step back for a moment from whatever it is that seems to have overtaken me emotionally or relationally, if I can just step out of the stress situation and the place it corners me emotionally or spiritually, or if I can just step out of the conflict for a moment or out of the disappointment, if I can just find some place or moment or way to regroup or reevaluate, if I can do that with intention, then I'll be able to find some way to gain a wider, better perspective, a newer perspective, and I'll be better. I'll be in a better place. I'll have a better understanding of what is right in front of me. Maybe I'll even be a better person. Often I think that all I need is a plan for widening my perspective. Of course, preferably a plan that is under my control and at my initiative. But when I think that way, I'm of course imagining relocating myself and my point of view to a place that probably isn't all that new. Rather, what I'm doing, what I'm able to do, is really something that is more about minimally relocating myself within the already established parameters of my own opinions or perspectives. So I look for things that are easily within reach, maybe a day off or a trip away, maybe a little focus on stepping back emotionally, or a small change in my routine, or reading something I don't usually read, or talking to someone I don't usually talk to. I imagine, I even hope, that one of those things may do the trick. But the truth is, what I am doing is something similar to the way in which one might make dinner plans or reservations for a night out, planning something slightly, hopefully, pleasantly out of the ordinary, but just a minor break from the regular routine. That's not really anything new. It may slightly adjust my perspective, but my intentional, minimal efforts to seek a new point of view, a fresh outlook, rarely yield the desired result. Instead, the most significant, the most compelling shifts seem to come when I'm looking the other way, when I am unfocused, even unpressured to see the new thing. For example, as much as I don't like the chore of cutting the grass, which I just started up again yesterday before the rain rolled in, got half of the yard mowed, I have found that new thoughts and release of resentments can often come when I'm sitting on the riding mower, simply following the lines of grass clippings back and forth and back and forth. Or when I'm in the shower, even on hurried days, I might have a new and unexpected thought, a change of mind about something. Apparently, warm water seems to help shift my perspective. Cold water works even better. Or when someone I pigeonholed says or does or offers or touches or forgives me in a way or in a moment I didn't expect, I can find myself quickly and stunningly moved to a new place, a new point of view. Sometimes people help me let go of the hard things in my heart just by being who they are, in small and unassuming ways. Not by trying to convert me or convince me or even compel me, but by being just who they are. Those moments, once I get over the brief sensation of disorientation, I think of as gifts from God. Because it is often then that I most clearly see God, peeking through or bubbling up in the honesty or vulnerability or graciousness of someone else's personality and perspective. But even with those simple and commonplace examples, I don't mean to suggest that the new point of view comes easily or even often. Sometimes I have to be dragged out of my dark corner or my cluttered landscape. And the more I know of myself and the more I know of others, the more I realize that in large degree, this is the story for all of us. It's hard to poke our heads above the trenches. It's even harder to climb all of the way out and set off for new and better places. The new creation that the Apostle Paul references in this scripture passage is not born easily, perhaps because such new birth always has the prerequisite of the death of the old. Something old has to be cleared away before there is space for something new. Even if the new space is just space for imagining something new. After all, the matter of changing one's mind or even changing one's heart isn't like changing one's clothes. It's more like cleaning out the entire closet. Anne Lamott, in her book, Plan B, Further Thoughts on Faith, talks about finding a new point of view, about becoming a new creation, and how hard it is, especially when we realize that the finding and claiming of the new point of view, the new creation, is not really about politics or personalities or even the issue of the day, but rather it's about confronting and releasing what's blind or hardened or bruised in us. In one chapter of her book, Lamott talks first about finding a gold chain necklace in a drawer on a Sunday morning, about a half hour before it's time to go to church. The chain is horribly tangled, and although as a child she remembers enjoying such tasks as untangling necklaces, she finds she hasn't the patience anymore. She puts the chain aside and heads off to church. She writes, "Change and forgiveness do not come easily for me, but any willingness to let go inevitably comes from pain. And the desire to change changes you and jiggles the spirit, gets it somehow to the deepest, hardest, most ruined parts, and then the spirit expands because that's its nature, and it drags along the body and finally the mind." So, everything was sweet at church, she continues. The singing, the kindness, and then the pastor had to go and ruin it all by giving a sermon on loving our enemies. It was like being in the Twilight Zone, she writes. It was clear that Pastor Veronica was speaking directly to me. She said that Christians have a very bad reputation in the world, and we have earned it with our hate and self-righteousness. We speak in reverent terms of grace, justice, equality, mercy, and then we despise people who are also created in God's image, who are children of God too. Then Lamott, thinking about all the persons who might be included in the scope of her pastor's statements about love and inclusion, realizes, quite to her dismay, that the scope of such love even includes the president, a man for whom her feelings and thoughts are significantly and continually quite negative. She ruminates at length about that, and then she says this, "To be honest, I'm never going to get anywhere with this president. But Jesus kept harping on forgiveness and loving one's enemies, so I decided to try." The sermon ended, people were crying. Veronica asked if anyone wanted to come forward for special prayer. Apparently no one did. I struggled to keep in my seat, but I found myself standing, then lurching forward stiffly. Veronica asked me quietly what I needed, and I whispered that I was so angry and afraid with some of the things happening in this country right now that it was making me mentally ill. She put her arm around me, and the church prayed for me, although they did not know what was wrong. I felt a shift inside, the conviction that love was having its way with me, softening me, changing my stone-cold heart. The feeling grew stronger and stronger until, unfortunately, church was over. That was day one, she reports, and it went pretty well. Day two was a bit more of a disappointment and a struggle. She started the day watching the news and found how quickly her old perspectives and her rising anger returned. But then she got the gold chain necklace she had started to work on and given up on before going to church the day before. She got it out of the drawer, and Lamott concludes the chapter with these words, a literal account of the tangled chain, but also a metaphor for us, of course. She writes, I got the chain out of the drawer and gave it another try. But I didn't have any patience. It crossed my mind to take a hammer to the miserable thing and bust it into pieces. Trying to unravel it was a waste of time. I didn't need it. But something inside me got back to work. Maybe I would find the perfect person to give it to. Someone who was down in the dumps, who had lost all hope of change, whose spirits would be lifted by a little present. So, tug, tug, poke, poke, I have to believe that if I do this, it will cause change. There will be more give, and more give means there is more light between the links. You never know exactly where the knot is going to release. But usually, if you keep working with it, it will. While scholars have plenty of ideas and opinions about what the Apostle Paul meant when he told the church at Corinth that they needed to stop seeing people from a human point of view, and that that applied to the way that they saw Jesus as well, I'm still not sure exactly what he had in mind. But I do suspect that when we stop with the human point of view, we can start seeing all manner of new things, a new creation, new creatures, and such. And I understand that if I stop looking for the light of Christ, or I stop trying to tune in to the vibration of the Spirit in the person right across from me, not only does God disappear, but that person's basic humanity seems to drain away right before my very eyes. And I also understand that when I concentrate on what others have done and on the nature of their old selves, including all the history I have with them, and keeping count of every mistake or hurt from the past, I can't see anything new at all. All I can do is continually mourn the losses and grieve the dead. Dead hopes and expectations as much as anything. But when I look through lenses of trust and grace, I can see all manner of amazing things. I can see old people as children. I can see potential instead of disappointment. And I can even start seeing Christ in the most unlikely places. Unlikely, that is, from a purely human point of view. I can see the wonderful newness in the new creation of another person loved by God. But what's really changed? Them? Me? Or the space, distance, light, color, temperature, attitude, vibration, echo, feeling, clarity, mercy between us? Has the situation changed? Or has my vision changed? Or have I changed? Maybe all of that. But first, I need God's help for a new point of view. Back in the fall of 2005, Christian Peacemaker team member Tom Fox was kidnapped in Iraq. About 6 months later, he was murdered. But several months before he was kidnapped, he wrote in a blog he had been keeping about a conversation he had with a U.S. Army colonel in the Green Zone in Baghdad, the part of Western Baghdad that was heavily fortified and protected for the international military and diplomatic presence during the occupation in Iraq. He reported the colonel as saying, quote, all of us took a 9-hour seminar on understanding the Iraqi culture when we got here a year ago. And then Fox continued. The colonel said his unit would be going home at the end of the month after a year in Iraq. But as was the case with many U.S. military and civilians working in the Green Zone, the colonel said he had never actually set foot outside of that zone. He had never been on a street in Baghdad. He had never been inside the home of an Iraqi family, nor had he seen any of the historical or cultural sites of the country. Fox reflected, it would seem easy to characterize the colonel's blanket statements about Iraq and the Iraqi people as hypocritical and bigoted. I am not the greatest judge of character, Fox confessed, but I kept having an image of him on the south rim of the Grand Canyon, holding up a tube from a roll of paper towels and describing what he saw. We are all finite creatures with a very limited field of vision, but what I do, and it is my sense that the Colonel does this also, instead of opening up my field of vision to include things I don't understand or agree with, is to make my field of vision even narrower. Out of sight, out of mind, Fox continues, is an old saying that seems rather apt in this case. The Colonel seemed very confident that the vision of the world he described was accurate and complete. And this was true. With his extremely limited worldview, his vision was indeed clear. But what about the vast universe he was not seeing? Fox continued. What about the vast universe that I'm not seeing? How do we all expand our vision to see things we do not want to see? How do we stop putting out of sight things we don't agree with? I wish I had an answer. I don't even know where to start. End quote. Tom Fox would have been too humble to say so, but I think he did know where to start. And was right where he was, by simply opening his eyes and opening his heart. Whether that being right where he was visiting with the colonel in the green zone, or cleaning up debris on the streets of Fallujah, or visiting with Iraqi families in their homes, or for the last stretch of his life, sitting in handcuffs in a locked room somewhere in Baghdad. I guess then the point for all of us is to put down the cardboard paper towel roll and to start seeing the wider picture, the new creation. That is, to see the whole Grand Canyon and not just one little dot. Seeing no longer from a human point of view is seeing more broadly, more vividly, more clearly, more graciously, with the eyes of Christ. Catching a vision of the new creation is seeing God in all God's glory, seeing God's mercy in all its wideness. That's the new point of view. That's the new vision. That's the one we want. Amen.